Yeah, like the Cold War on March 13th, 2023.
That was a dry run. Like to call to order our March 15th, 2023 meeting of the Ventura Port District. So we shall start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm going to take it. So the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. That's what I get for not picking somebody in advance. All right, let's move on to a roll call, please.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Here.
Chair Rubenberg?
Here.
And Commissioners Brennan and Rainey are absent today.
Next topic is the adoption of our agenda, commissioners. I move approval.
I'll second.
I've got a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. Okay. Madam Clerk, should I be asking for public comments on that agenda? There's a little late. Okay. All right. So we'll move on to approval of the minutes.
I'll move the minutes as presented.
I'll second that.
Oh, I have got a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the minutes are adopted. All right. So now we'll give the public that opportunity. So this is not public communications, an opportunity for the public to address items that are not on tonight's agenda. So do we have anybody who would like to address the board? Anybody online? No? All right. So we will close public comments and turn to council for a report on closed session. Andy, you out there? Did we lose him?
We can come back to it if he's
okay.
Oh, wait. Hold on.
There he is. We see you, Andy.
I'm here.
All right. Closed session report.
Oh, we're already there?
We're already there.
A closed session was held as set forth in the closed session agenda. The board heard a report on each of the items there and items 1 and 2, gave directions to staff as how to proceed. And item 3, the board continued its performance evaluation of the general manager. No action was taken that is reportable under the Brown Act.
All right. Thank you, Andy. We're going to move on to staff and general manager reports.
Commissioner,
oh, I'm sorry. First. Yep. I skipped board communications. Thank you. So, board communications, commissioners, opportunity to present brief reports on issues related to the port, commissioners.
I'll just comment very quickly. I had an opportunity to attend the tenant recognition ceremony that we had, and a terrific event. It seems to get better and better every time, and just want to thank staff for coordinating that, and thank all of our tenants for all of the good work. I mean, the village is just a terrific place, and it's due to all of your hard work. So thank you very much for that.
I had the opportunity to go back to Washington, D.C. and attend the CMAC, California Maritime and Navigation Council meetings with our operations manager, Todd, successfully met with our Congressman Carbajal in the Senator's office and Corps of Engineers, Office of Management and Budget. And I will let Todd brag about the benefits that we've reaped from those relationships. So it was a successful meeting, very informative week, and Washington, D.C. was beautiful. So, all right, we will close board communications, and now staff and general manager.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of items here, and then I did want to get a
a quick update from Todd on the president's budget that came out last week and had information regarding Ventura Harbor dredging. So I wanted to touch on that. But a couple of things. In honor of International Women's Day on March 8th, Ventura Harbor Village recognized Anna Sosnicki, a Polish-born owner of Anya's Boutique, sharing in a blog post several of the internationally women-owned businesses and products in which her boutique features. Women's History Month is an opportunity to highlight women who have made an impact on the harbor community. This year, Judy Cunningham of Ventura Yacht Club is featured. Judy was the first woman who was selected with the honor of lifetime member at Ventura Yacht Club and has served as an integral part of the programming and leadership of the Ventura Yacht Club over 34 years. She has also been awarded a POP, how do I say this, MASA? Anybody? MASA, thank you, award for her many contributions to the racing programs here in the harbor. Glad we have Dave Boatner here today. On Saturday, March 4th, the Mermaid Month event drew hundreds of visitors and families at the village as the village was activated with live musicians, entertainers, crafts, kids pirate ship, surf rider foundation, interactive booths, and more. A second day of festivities includes a mermaid maker market with village artisans and makers and an array of activities again this Sunday, March 19th from noon to 3 p.m. So everyone come out and join us. For a second year in a row, Ventura Harbor Village publicity team, our marketing department secured a 4.5-minute segment on KTLA Channel 5 Morning News to feature the Ventura Harbor Village and Mermaid Month. Working with several of the village tenants, the team will be heading down to the studio on Friday to highlight many of the activities and village amenities, sweet treats and artists that are part of Mermaid Month. We all got some news today, very favorable to Island Packers. National Park Service announced today a 10-year concession contract award to Island Packers to provide year-round boat transportation service from Ventura to the Channel Islands National Park. The Island Packers Corporation has held the current concession contract since 2011. The new contract will begin on January 1st, 2024. And of course, we know they're a business who have been here for over 50 years.
And women-owned, correct?
Absolutely. So with that, I'd like to turn to Todd and have him give a quick update. As the chair mentioned, a trip to D.C. With the president's Office of Management and Budget and also congressional leaders. But around that time or shortly thereafter, we got some news from the president's budget.
Yeah, I'll just be brief because I'll report on it in the dredging report next month. But this year, we are currently in the dredging cycle of the fiscal year 2023 money. So we are already battling for money for 2024. And the first step in that is being included in the president's budget at all. 7 years ago, we didn't make it at all, and it was major panic, nearly closure of the entrance of the channel. In more recent years, we get about half to two-thirds included in the budget, and then we have to have Congress fight for the rest for us, our representative. We took a more proactive approach last fall. Carbajal and Brownlee jointly wrote a letter to the president's Office of Management and Budget advocating for full inclusion of the harbor. And we got that and then some. We $8.47 million allocated in the president's budget. At this point, that kind of makes it a done deal, but we still need the congressmen and the senators to support that budgetary request, but that's sort of pro forma. That'll allow all the dredging that we would anticipate to happen next year, plus enough money to update the environmental impact statement and another round of procurement, which is about another $1 million of that. So this is a huge win. I really think that the visit to DC, where we had the opportunity to meet with OMB, to have Carbajal make another call to OMB behind the scenes and to speak with the higher levels of the Corps, really got us across the finish line because we've never achieved that before.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes our reports tonight.
Yeah, I would just like to add to Todd's report a thank you to Julie Minerva back at Carpe and Clay. She did a lot of good coaching for us and helped us be successful. And then thank you to Todd. The meeting with Congressman Carbajal, he did a great job of just laying out the Port District's needs, why it was important, and why
you know, why it was important for him to get engaged, and then a big thank you for him getting engaged. So he handled that meeting very well. So, commissioners, any other thoughts on the staff and general manager report? All right. We'll close that item and we'll move on to our consent agenda. We have six items on the consent agenda. And everybody knows these are items that are typically or intended to be non-controversial and acted upon in one fell swoop or one vote. I'm just going to read or summarize quickly the six items. Item A is approval for out-of-town travel requests, including the general manager, our marketing manager, and Harbor Patrol officers going to training. Item B, approval, assignment, and assumption of a lease. C is a new office lease. D is another new office lease. E is a new retail lease. F is a amendment to a professional services agreement with Liebert, Cassidy, and Whitmore. So, commissioners, what's your pleasure for the consent agenda?
Do we want
public comments? Yes, we should ask for public comments. Do we have any public comments on the consent agenda in the room or online? Seeing no public comments, I'll turn it back to the commissioners.
I'll move the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Hearing none, the consent agenda is approved. All right, we'll move on to our standard agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tonight, we have Coastal Marine Biolabs, a current activities update. The recommendation for you this evening is that the Board of Port Commissioners receive an update from Coastal Marine Biolabs on current activities, including recent educational activities, the organization's funding status, and ongoing collaborations. Joining us this evening from Coastal Marine Biolabs to present is Dr. Linda Sanchi and Dr. Ralph Amandi. Come on up.
Sit down and relax.
Good evening, everyone. I think everyone here knows me, but I'm Linda Sanchi, one of the two founding directors of Coastal Marine Biolabs, or CMB for short. We're certainly delighted to have the opportunity to speak here this evening and provide a very brief update on our activities and current funding status. My presentation will be very general in scope. Of course, anyone that has an interest in learning a little bit more about our programs, I encourage you to visit the main CMB website, which is at the URL that's indicated on my introductory slide. Of course, we also welcome in-person visits to the lab at any time. So I don't have a next slide, please. So I'll begin with our mission and history. So CMB was established in 2006 as a 501c3 educational nonprofit aimed at addressing science education reform agenda. And since its inception, our goal as academic research scientists has been to collaborate with members of the educational community to try to develop strategies to help address a very profound incongruency that exists between how science is actually performed in real-world research settings and how science is taught and experienced in high school classrooms. And this disconnect poses a very serious threat to our nation's innovative capacity and has already diminished our international standing in terms of science research output and the volume of high impact studies. It also makes our population extremely vulnerable to misinformation that can undermine public trust in science more generally. So this is a very unfortunate disconnect that we feel desperately needs to be addressed. And from our perspective, there's no better way of doing this than putting scientists in the same room as motivated and ambitious science teachers. Next slide, please. Setting up a lab that could support the types of educational activities that we envisioned during our formative years presented a significant challenge to our young organization. However, we were able to overcome that challenge more quickly than we had anticipated with significant equipment donations and funding support from corporate foundations, most notably from Amgen and from SoCal Edison. We were also able to fill any remaining gaps in our equipment needs through private philanthropic support, particularly for the high-end microscopy that we required to get the lab set up. Suffice it to say that the CMB lab now rivals and in some cases exceeds the, in terms of physical capacity, that of top-tier university research labs. Next slide, please. Our programming was formally launched in 2007 with summer residential research institutes for high school students that were specifically designed to emulate in as much as possible a graduate level learning environment, but designed for high school students. So these were immersive residential tuition-based experiences that unfolded in our lab under the mentorship of our students. We were very pleased that these programs initially rather rapidly attracted the attention of students, academically high-performing students from all over the country, who in most cases already had an interest in science, in pursuing careers in science and medicine. Now, from our perspective, thinking about our mission, the pursuit of our mission, this was a modest step forward, but we recognized that we would need sustained and high level support from federal agencies in order to explore different educational approaches that would perhaps enhance the inclusivity of our programs. Next slide, please. So we began receiving federal funding first from the National Science Foundation, or NSF, in 2011, and then later from the National Institutes of Health from 2014 to the present. And it was indeed this level of funding support that allowed us to begin to adopt different educational strategies that would increase the sphere of impact on different types of student populations. And if the goal is to achieve transformative change in the educational system, which very much is our goal to do so, then this is imperative to be able to reach a broader diversity of students. Next slide, please. Over the last several years, actually the last 5 years, we shifted our focus outward as opposed to inward with direct engagement to students, to the engagement of science teachers and enabling them to bring resources and instructional units into their science classrooms and hopefully spark some excitement in a broader diversity of students with mixed interests and academic performance histories. Next. So what do we do at CMB? Well, we do a lot of different things. We still continue to engage local students in internships in our laboratory, and we also engage in a number of different education outreach type activities. But our primary goal is to develop programs that hopefully inspire and motivate students to use science as a tool to, frankly, do good things for human and planetary health. And no matter of what the specific research emphasis or even the specific scientific content of those programs, every program that we design conforms to an overlapping set of foundational design principles that are illustrated here on this slide. So early student engagement in research with clear societal implications, early student immersion in interdisciplinary learning experiences, early student exposure to the scientific model building enterprise, and early opportunities for students to explore science as a social and collaborative enterprise. Next slide, please. We also devote a significant amount of time to the development of resources, to ancillary resources, to support classroom implementation of our programming. And to that end, we tap into an extensive collaborative network that enables us to develop resources that teachers can take directly into their own lab or download directly from the internet. So we've partnered with informaticians, data analysts, data managers, data architects, game developers to create instructional supports that enable students to access, capture, analyze, and share data, and also more deeply explore important scientific concepts and ideas. These ancillary supports take the form of instructional supports and learning assessment tools, web-based multimedia, data sharing platforms, field applications, and serious games, to name a few. Through the years, we do track the utilization of these resources, and we're pleased that there is now broad uptake of some of them that are now reaching students and teachers across 20 countries. Next slide, please. So I'll switch to our current funding status, and I'm really happy to open by saying that this year, 2023, marks the 12th year of uninterrupted federal funding support for our organization. Apart from receiving funding from a modest amount of funding from the Amgen Foundation annually, CMB is currently supported, at least in part, by a 5-year Science Education Partnership Award from the National Institute of General Medical Sciences, NIGMS, which is one of the 27 institutes and centers that reside at the National Institutes, or that fall under the banner of the National Institutes of Health. So the NIGMS is organized into 5 divisions that support research, research training, and capacity building in a range of scientific fields. Next slide. So in keeping with the NIGMS funding priority to support research training, the Science Education Partnership Program supports educational activities that complement or otherwise enhance the workforce training necessary to meet the nation's biomedical, behavioral, and clinical research needs. So we're currently in the 4th year of this particular project, which began back in July of 2019 and will conclude at the end of June in 2024. Next slide, please. Now, the project that I just the funding that I just described is the second series of funding that we received from the same SEPA project. So the first funding that we received from the Science Education Partnership Award at NIH, we call NeuroLab 1.0, and this project began in 2014 and ended in 2019. Now, this was a neuroscience-focused research experience that enabled students to experience an authentic, multidisciplinary, and collaborative research environment that unfolded in our lab during summer research internships. While the program was extremely successful in meeting its educational outcomes, it was reliant upon access to specialized physical resources that are inaccessible to high school science labs. It relied upon access to mentors that have the requisite scientific training and knowledge to guide students through complex scientific concepts and protocols. And it also attracted a rather homogeneous population of students, those that were academically high performing, coming from high support families, and those that in a lot of cases were already interested in science and medicine. So the current project, the NeuroLab 2.0, that is currently funded under the SEPA program, is an effort to translate the NeuroLab 1.0 experience through collaboration into an instructional unit that is ready for implementation in the high school science classroom, that is more scalable, that is more replicable, that is not reliant upon access to specialized physical resources and expertise necessarily, and enhances inclusivity in the target student population, but that retains the authenticity, the multidisciplinary scope, and the collaborative nature of the original research experience upon which it is based. Next slide, please. So as you might imagine, teachers are an integral part of making this translation possible. So the project involves extensive collaborations with local high school science teachers who provide, well, they come to the lab on a regular basis for workshops to not only enhance their own knowledge of science process and inquiry, but who provide invaluable input on unit design, on classroom implementation strategies, and assessment approaches and tools for student learning. And this is a collaboration that we're extremely excited about, as we expect it to grow over the next 5 years or so, as our plan is to go in for a third round of funding from the same Science Education Partnership Award at the NIH. The new funding solicitation is expected to be released in mid-spring with a submission deadline in July. And Ralph and I are extremely excited to submit a scale-up proposal that will not only scale our partnership network, but it will also scale the impact and reach of our program regionally and beyond. Next slide, please. I'll end by briefly introducing an award that we recently received just a few months ago in December from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences at NIH, NIEHS. NIEHS research emphasizes the interplay of environmental exposures, human biology, genetics, and common diseases to improve human health. Next slide, please. Some of you may recognize the congruency between the funding priority of NIEHS and the prior work that CMB performed in its collaboration on the aquaculture extension and technology transfer grants that were awarded to the Port District through NOAA. And some of you may also recall that on the second of those C grants award, CMB's role was to focus on the public health safety aspect of the project and the development of a baseline biotoxin monitoring program in consultation with the FDA. Next slide, please. Our goal with this new NIEHS educational project is to engage teachers in the creation and implementation of a new instructional unit that can be incorporated into a diversity of high school life science courses and also career technical education CTE courses. The new unit will enable students to explore the interplay of shellfish aquaculture, marine biotoxins, public health, and neuroscience. The project also has a very strong citizen science component where it enables students the opportunity to contribute meaningful data to the nation's longest standing biotoxin monitoring program that is managed by our partners and friends at the California Department of Public Health. So we're extremely excited over this new project and the continuity that it establishes and leverages on the work that we, the collaborative work that we prior conducted with the Ventura Port District. And we're also extremely excited to update all of you on the progress of this particular project as it gains momentum. And I think I'm over my 10 minutes. So I will thank you for the time to speak, the opportunity to speak this evening, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Linda, thank you very much for that update. Commissioners, any comments, questions on this update?
Linda, I really appreciate the presentation. I think in the previous presentation that I was able to listen to you and talk about the work that you do, it was kind of VSC focused, even though I knew about the educational piece and you brought that into it. I am just so impressed with what you guys have done. And if I'm reading the numbers right, you have a 20-year anniversary coming up. Yeah. And so one of the things I'm wondering about, you have really big, important goals. Have you guys done any kind of like alumni tracking about kids that have gone through the program? Or
we do. Yeah. We do. Not formally, but we do. And when we know that we should formalize that tracking, but yeah, we do have some of that data.
Yeah, no, I just think what a wonderful set of objectives that you've had. And I have no doubt that you've had enormous impact on individual kids' lives, as well as the ripple effect that they bring into their worlds. So it'd be wonderful if there were metrics to back that up as well. So well done. Really enjoyed the presentation. And thank you for what you do.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Linda, thank you, Ken, for that. You know, when you come and talk to us like this, it's always somewhat remarkable to me that, you know, we have this really highly respected educational institution right here in our harbor, and I'm willing to bet almost no one in Ventura knows that you exist, right? I mean, but what you're
some
doing
people
is,
do. Which wouldn't.
Yeah, I do, and I actually did know about you before I was here on the commission, but and I don't know that you need to advertise yourself, but it would be wonderful if the community really, and maybe the 20-year anniversary is some way to get yourself out there a little more and let the community know that you're here and what you're doing. I mean, it's really wonderful work. It's great for the kids in the community. And I just think it would be great if more people knew what you were doing and that you were there. So, but other than that, it's just, I'm so happy that you are here. It's a great.
Couldn't have done what we've done without the support that we've received through the years from the Port Commission. So I can't extend a more heartfelt thank you right back at you.
I don't think any of us would be averse to additional exposure. It's funny when you're a scientist, promoting highly discouraged. And so we've been very, very bad at those kinds of activities, although we're getting better at it. And as we go out, as we're faced with the task of recruiting teachers to participate in these types of experiences, we're forced to interface with various entities and agencies and institutions like the County Office of Ed and you name it. So we are getting better at it, but with so much work to do with just a few people, it's hard to get. And I don't know that we have the bandwidth for many more teachers and students, but we'll see how we do it. So you probably need to stop.
I recently had the opportunity to tour Exeter Academy back in New Hampshire. And you see, Linda, you were talking about how not every student has that opportunity. That was an impressive campus. And my son graduated Ventura High, not quite the same budget as that private academy. And so I'm thrilled to hear that you're bringing these opportunities to our local students. Are you still doing the summer internships with the high school students, or what?
Not in the same form that we have done in the past. I mean, our summers are largely devoted to the engagement of teachers now, but we do still host internships throughout the year, not structured the same way as these intensive short, you know, duration experiences. They're more extended experiences for students, but it's taking a second priority now to our engagement of teachers, because we feel that we're really broadening our impact and inclusivity by going that route, and we just didn't have a mechanism to do that in the beginning, so we had to start somehow, you know. So we still engage students, but I will say that it's second priority now to our engagement of teachers.
Yeah, the lab has now been full of teachers.
Yeah.
It's a different experience altogether.
It really
I
is.
Think in terms of impact, I think. It's certainly a lot of fun to work with.
Your slide with the two brains and the transferring of the knowledge was a good takeaway. So that's what you're trying to do is get those teachers to think differently and take that back to all of our kids.
Exactly. So.
They're two different cultures. They're two entirely different cultures, and we need to understand each other's culture in order to understand how we can move the needle to transform the
future. Very good. Well, as Chris said, we're glad to have you as part of the family here at the harbor. Are there any other public comments? Anybody here that would like to add? Here or not? No? Thank you very much. Appreciate the update.
Thank you, Linda.
So that was a receive only. So we'll say thank you very much, and we'll move on to a discussion of parcel 5.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item number 2 here is a presentation on the portion of parcel 5 between 1591 and 1691 Spinnaker Drive. The recommendation for you tonight is for the commission to receive a presentation of prior landscape design concepts prepared by RRM Design Group on behalf of the district. for that grass lawn area of parcel 5 and provide direction to myself regarding future uses and design efforts. Based on discussion at the most recent stakeholder workshop in December of 21, and also during the adoption of the new guiding principles and updated five-year objectives, there was some discussion about the possibility of upgrading the grass area from a passive open space to a more activated gathering place that would continue to be managed by the district as it is today. Specifically in the five-year objectives, the district's objectives call for the master planning for development of parcel 5 to begin this year. So we are here and we are ready to engage the board and our tenants and the public and stakeholders to have this a discussion about what was some of the visioning in the past and what could be the vision for the future. So look forward to a presentation tonight from Leif McKay, who's principal with RRM, and Nick Deitch, who is an architect as well. Thank you.
Good evening. This is a little bit surreal for me. I was actually, and it was really cool to see Coastal Marine. I was on Port Commission when they were in their infancy, and there was a lot of stewardship and back and forth. And it's just amazing to see that they have, you know, persevered and grown their program. And it really is, like you said, it's just amazing to have the diversity here. And which is something I discovered when I was telling Leif that it was kind of like being on a city council of a small town, you know, because of the cross section of interests and all of that. So I was on Port Commission when we hired RRM. This was not something I orchestrated here. I had my own firm for 38 years, Main Street Architects and Planners in Ventura. And it was a joy to work with them at the time and to work with staff. Familiar faces. This is really strange. And there was some really good work. And then it was really wonderful to see, you know, things get implemented. Thought it just kind of take you through a little bit of an overview of that work. And then we're really here to share ideas, hear your thoughts, and, you know, see where things may go. So is this Jessica at the computer? Hi, Jessica. We've been exchanging emails. And I apologize because there's a few animations here. So I'm going to be saying next, next, next. Okay, so 2011, here's the what I'm referring to as the Lighthouse Plaza. I'm not quite sure what you refer to it now as, but the Lighthouse Plaza in 2011, and it was a pleasant enough space with some lawn and a kind of a beat up gazebo. next slide, please. And then here we are. This shot was taken a couple of days ago, and I have to tell you, it's remarkable. It's just really cool to see this place thriving and evolving. The next slide, please. So here's the, you know, we're all familiar with this, the overall Harbor Village. It's a really interesting, incredible asset that the Harbor has. And it's gone through its own, you know, evolution over the years, but it stayed, you know, there's some constancy about it. I, for one, I'm sure you guys too have brought my family and friends here many, many times to introduce them to Ventura and to experience the water and the food and the boats and the ice cream and all of that stuff. Next slide, please. Right now, you know, that the Lighthouse Plaza, I would say, is kind of the heart of the joint, except maybe for Andrea's, which, you know, depending on whether you're lining up for fish and chips. But this is really the kind of the point of arrival. At least when I bring people down, I try to bring them to that place. That's where we come. And then we go from there. Next slide, please. So parcel 5 is really what we're talking about this evening, but we want to look at it in the context of the whole place. Next slide, please. So the promenade is, you know, this wonderful experience. You walk along the promenade and you enjoy the water and the boats and the people. And it's just kind of an indelible part of being here. Next slide, please. And then you get to parcel 5. And, you know, I've got my mother-in-law and my, you know, cousins and whoever. And we walk down to the end and it's like, and sometimes there's stuff going on here. And then we turn around and we walk back. And it's just part of the experience. And when something's happening there, it's pretty cool. Next slide, please. So zooming in a little bit. Next slide, please. parcel five, the boundaries, and I've included the promenade in the boundary just to think of it as a place. Next slide, please. And it's actually beautiful. You know, these shots were taken maybe 8 days ago. It's gorgeous. And even as a lawn, it's gorgeous, I have to admit. Next slide, please. And, you know, you've implemented some pretty cool improvements over the last several years. The wayfinding is very handsome and functional. It actually works. And I really love what's gone on with the utility boxes. It seems like a kind of a small thing, but my gosh, I want to see us do that all over town. This is beautiful. They're little works of art. Next slide, please. So here we are. Next slide. Promenade. Next. The what might happen. Next. There's a passage here that doesn't get a lot of attention, but it's an asset, and it's something that to think about as we talk about parcel five, that little passage between the grass and a courtyard. Next slide, please. And then some years ago, 10 years ago, I guess, RRM came and did some interactive work with the board and with the community. And Leif here is going to talk a little bit about how that evolved. I think before I jump to that, just a couple more slides, Jessica. Again, to just think about the existing connections, the arrival to what next. And okay, so I'm going to ask Leif to come up and talk a little bit about what this plan represented, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you, Nick, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. My name's Leif Mackay. It's about 10 years since I was here, and last time I was presenting to Nick. We've since joined forces, and I think we're all better off for it. I know I am. So when we were originally retained by the district, we did a pretty deep dive on the whole village, trying to make some sense of all the little nooks and crannies and make it a little more intuitive and uniform and unified throughout. And we always looked at this parcel at the north end as a bit of a conundrum, because it lacked that gravitational pull to make you want to go to that part of the village. And part of our goals as designers was to draw people through that were in other areas of the village and really provide, terrible pun, but an anchor point at this end of the village that had some sort of sense of arrival and as a destination. I'm not sure if there's any animations on here or not. Is there one? You might, yeah, click. Thanks, Jessica. So we were trying to come up with a solution that activated this space. We talked to staff in preparation for tonight, and they were talking with sort of a source of sense of pride about how they'd successfully come through the pandemic by utilizing outdoor spaces in the plaza. And I think we're coming out of COVID with probably a greater sense of appreciation for what quality outdoor spaces can be for a community and the benefit they bring. So we came up with actually a number of ideas that they were kind of variations on the theme that you're looking at tonight. It was a relocation of the lost stage in front of the lighthouse building, that little gazebo. And it was also just to provide a flexible space that the district could program in a number of ways, informal, active, passive. And we were trying to meet a number of goals. We wanted to come up with a solution that was not competitive with existing businesses, but complementary. So, you know, when people have a reason to come down to this end of the village, that they're there for a children's play experience or some music, and everyone benefits. They buy coffee, ice cream. Children's playgrounds, that was an idea that's right at that. It's like a little peekaboo view through the paseo there. And that would be complementary to the indoor recreation you have for kids in the village today. But that's I'm not in that phase of life anymore, but when my kids were of that age, I knew every playground in the city with my eyes closed. You know, it was, you're on a circuit, and cool playgrounds bring people all the time. And it's times when the village is quiet. At other times, it's mornings with parents and toddlers and things like that. So it's a really good balance for these commercial spaces. And we had, can you click again? These are just a different view, sort of an oblique view looking out. You can see we tried to make it a little more formal. You know, it's so casual right now. It's just like sort of the backyard that people don't really think about. Give it a bit more presence and articulation of space. So this is the idea here is a graceful promenade around the backside facing the marina with some sort of a fairly understated sort of stage structure that doesn't impede the view, but maybe it's inspired by sort of some maritime architectural cues. Circulation is improved 200%. Right now it's just grass, especially in the winter we're having. That's pretty much, you can't do much on that grass. You just walk around the edge. So this is giving you a way to loop around and through, like Nick was saying. It's, if it's the termination point of your walk, you can go out and around and back in. It also has the side benefit of cutting about a third of the lawn out from a sustainability. Funny talking about no water right now, but with the state of our natural resources, you know, that's, we're always looking for sort of minimizing lawn and just focusing it on where it actually has a recreational purpose and not just for looks. Next slide, please. Oops, back one, sorry. I thought there was one more, but maybe not. The last point I wanted to make is we looked at all sorts of ways to structure this space by building it up, sloping it more like a traditional amphitheater. We looked at keeping it all flat so you could also have a car show or a art fair, whatever you might want to be. So balancing the flexibility and purpose-built space was at the sort of one of the primary considerations we had. You can also see, if you look carefully, that at either end of that graphic, there's like a red dot with a little figure on it. That's just alluding to some sort of art pieces that are installed there to give it a bit more of a sense of identity as well. So that was our thinking at the time. This is one solution. There are many, obviously, but the point of activating this space and giving people a reason to be there was really our primary focus, and keeping it flexible and vibrant, and really grounding that end of the plaza and holding it in. So we just finished with a series of points on the next slide. And these could be just at the board's pleasure. If you'd like to entertain a discussion or any sort of have any questions, these might be some seeds for talking points, but I can conclude there unless staff has any closing comments. Thank you
very much. I think first of all, Nick, I want to say welcome back. So I wonder where I'll be in a few years. So in a good place, yeah, let's hope. Commissioners, thoughts, comments, feedback?
Thank you for that. And it was nice to see the old renderings from that exercise. And I wasn't involved in that at the time, but I mean, I like the thinking, right? And the idea that area can become some sort of, I'll just say a hub of activity. I don't want to say an anchor. I don't know that it's going to function quite like that, but that you know, it can be a destination, as you say. So when you get to the end, as you often do, rather than shrug and turn around, you're going to actually be drawn into something else. And I like the idea of having something that is available for maybe larger events that can bring more people down. Because as you say, that it's important that it be complementary and not competitive with our other tenants. And I know we've talked with them about various events, what's successful, what's not. And I do know from other places, things like the occasional Sunday concert or things of that nature can be really successful at bringing people down. So I like those ideas. The renderings look nice. I'm not an architect, so I'm not going to comment too much other than that they look nice at this point to me. But I think I think that's the right direction to go and think about doing something with the property.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I think one of the things that has come up, if we are to use it for public space and for concerts, for movies, other things like that, is there a way to design it that has some wind protection?
I'll never get a word in edgewise once you start.
I say good luck with that.
we wrestled with that. we wrestled with that. We actually came up with some concepts that had a series of sails that sort of were emulated sails on a ship as giant sort of wind foils at the back. I would say you can mitigate it to a degree. You can't tame it. So it's always going to be an existing condition, and it just depends on how much sort of physical effort you want to go into to mitigate it. It's always a dilemma with, you know, unobstructed views and keeping it nice and open and airy feeling. So we tried to come up with some architectural approach to that. I'm not a wind engineer either, but I my sense is mitigate, not eliminate.
And I want to point out that I wasn't on the team at that time, and I could have brought a level of creativity to that.
Here we go.
But what the cool thing about it is that it's challenges like that make design, you know, do something unique, remarkable. And I know they grappled with it some, and I don't think we had the full force of our will behind it at that time. But it could be as simple as a curved tree row at the back of that promenade. That's one way to deal with it. It could be panels of art panels that create a screen. Now, as Leif said, I don't think we'll completely eliminate wind, but I do think we can mitigate it. And I think if we get creative about it, we can have some fun doing it.
Just continuing on the wind idea, I've been at the beach occasionally when it felt like a sandblaster out there, right? You're getting pelted with the sand on the beach, but you come over here to the village and there's just some natural shelter. So it's if I had brought my little kids to the beach and I'm getting pelted with sand, having the ability to come across to a playground, you know, that's a great fallback. And we recently did we lost a carousel from the village. So having another place to bring the young children would be great. I think we're going to attract a more mature crowd with some of the new developments. That's great. On the over by the tower, having this over there, it's a nice compliment. Your description of walking and hitting that kind of empty space is perfect. I mean, I think we've all done it. And I think we feel exactly the same way. It feels like Island Packers, congratulations on their new contract, by the way. But it seems like Island Packers is disconnected from the village, and that grassy area is kind of like the no man's land. My dog loves it, but yeah, there's a better use. So I'm excited about the vision that you put out there. I'm excited that we're talking about it. That was what we asked Brian to do. We put it in the goals this year of let's bring this back into the conversation. So you touched on sustainability. That's a big focus for, I think, the board. So I like the fact that you're touching on that. I like the vision, but I think it's, you know, let's continue to work down this road. The one thing I didn't hear from you is the passage idea goes right by one of our new tenants, Conway Deep Sea Winery. You know, you got a winery and you got a grassy area. Is there a way to do that legally? I don't know. We have to work with the city on that, but that's not a bad option if I got a bottle of wine and a nice place to sit and watch the boats go by. Yeah. So exciting. I think the points of consideration are good. We probably, if we want to debate this tonight, but maybe we take this as our homework assignment, look at this, maybe come back of, are these the right points? Maybe I in my world, I talk about top level requirements, right? Do we want to establish at our level some goals, some key considerations that you could use to kind of solicit some more ideas? So great start.
And I think that's right. I think what, you know, given there's historical information here that was fun to bring back. And I think tonight is, in my mind, a little less about programming the space and do you like the direction? And is this sort of the policy direction that you'd want this space to begin to go in? Because then we would begin to start to look at things for budgeting for FY 23-24 for a capital improvement project, soft cost for architecture design, coordination with the city, coastal commission, you know, all those different variables that'll come into play. We obviously didn't want to get started on those kinds of things without having this higher level discussion about, you know, looking at it from a much higher level and looking at use. I think what's really interesting is being able to look at it now through the lens of the current guiding principles and the updated five-year objectives and go, how can all those things, you know, I mentioned this specifically was in the five-year objectives, but there's so many other things that are in there as well, like sustainability and so on, that now could be brought to bear in a design that probably wouldn't have been thought about nearly as much 10 years ago. So I think that's really creates a neat opportunity.
Right. Do we have any public comments here? Any thoughts? Any public comments online? All right.
I had
staff.
I had something else real quick. Right.
We'll go back to Chris.
If I could, and I'm not sure whether it was Leif or Nick who mentioned it, but you kind of talked about, I think, the greater view shed this through there. And it kind of got me thinking, and I don't know if I'm advocating this or not, because it would affect parking. But was there any, we don't really have a formal connection to the beach, even though we're a beach community, right? Was there when this was done, or was there any thought about some sort of more attractive pedestrian connection to the beach from there?
Good question. Yeah, there was. It wasn't a grand promenade, but there was a more formalized tree-lined pass through that big sea of parking, and it lined up more with the lighthouse sort of central area, but it was a formalized sort of safer feeling, more directional path through. Yeah.
Just really quickly, actually, that is a very key focus that will be part of the sustainable transportation planning effort.
Excellent. Very good. Glad to hear it.
Jennifer.
Chairman, commissioners. There we go. It's on. Good evening, Chairman and commissioners. Thank you. I really appreciate the presentation and good to see you both again. And I was lucky enough to be on those teams to kind of be part of the staff involvement in those projects, and really exciting to see them come back. And yes, we do get a lot of questions. So I think our general manager operations, I think they're right on the right path for, you know, really activating this space. We're super excited to see these ideas coming back. As you can see, what we've been able to do with the section that they talked about earlier, which we call the Channel Island Courtyard and the Kelp Corridor and the promenade now, we activate that all the time and we get a lot of great comments on that space. So to continue this connection, I think it's really important. And we are seeing more and more, you know, now that we have changed some of our amenities in the Harbor Village, you know, more interest from families too. What can you offer to us to be down here? So that is an important element. As you know, we are activating the lawn more now. And so we are seeing more community groups wanting to come back and use that space. So it's everything from dog adoption, pooch parades to car shows to now we're doing the movies, like you mentioned. And also I love the idea of the stage, which I thought was really a great idea and concept. I never thought to really just pivot it with the background being the harbor. So that was really something that I really enjoyed in the first presentation and seeing that again. So we're really excited to see what you decide and what vision you have to move forward.
Just a couple of follow-up comments on that. Jennifer and Ruby put on, what was it, two movies last summer, and I think attracted somewhere between 400 and 500 folks coming out to come see those two movies. So I thought that was great to see.
And what I did want to say is this Sunday, if you do want to see that in action, we do have the kids' ship, pirate ship, there at that exact, almost exact location they're speaking of. And you could see that kind of activation, like you said, of, you know, families and kids going down there and just having something to run on and play on. And we find that really does help keep people here longer. And our goal is to have visitors and guests stay longer. They will then shop more, they will buy more, and you know, they're onto ice cream and sweet treats and then dinner. Thank you.
One other note about the stage. I think the way that Leaf designed that makes the sound to go west towards the ocean. I mean, generally you'd want it to go west or you'd want it to go south. Sound does carry over water pretty easily. And if it were facing it, and you probably thought of this when you guys were working on this back then, but, you know, facing other directions, we have a lot of folks who live in the harbor. And that's a consideration in terms of sound. And I think, you know, in terms of the scale of the stage is not meant to be, you know, a large scale thing. But if you do have amplified music, it's nice if it's going the opposite direction.
Well, the prevailing winds go that way as well. So we'll carry. I'm sure you did this when you did your first exercise, but as you think about our comments and how you're going to kind of move things forward, I just emphasize how important it is to get our tenants and our other stakeholders involved, kind of, you know, plumb those depths, right? What are they thinking and what do they see as needs? And listen, I'm sure you did that the first go round, but we're going to need to kind of refresh that and make sure we get the word out.
Well, we know the city's Pure Water Project is going to impact Marina Park. There's a great pirate ship over there, and I just think, you know, what a pirate ship in the harbor for mermaids. Yeah, well, I think this is very successful. You've obviously generated a lot of enthusiasm, so good start.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so this was a receive only, so and we did the public comments, so we're going to move on. Item three on our standard agenda, which is presentation of the General Plan Advisory Committee Local Coastal Program Update.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, presentation on GPAC, as it's called, Local Coastal Plan Update. Recommendations for you tonight is the Board of Port Commissioners receive a presentation on the General Plan Advisory Committee and Local Coastal Plan Update. The city of Ventura is undergoing a comprehensive general plan update and an update to the local coastal plan as well. The project is currently in the land use alternatives phase and discussing potential land use changes in the city. I know there have been meetings on specific areas of the city, downtown, I think Midtown, another area, and we offered the city team the opportunity to come to our meeting here and give you an update and gather feedback from you and from stakeholders and tenants and the public as a whole. So the city would like to do that again, getting feedback from all those different groups. My goal tonight would be to gather the feedback from the discussion tonight and return to the board at a subsequent meeting with recommendations to formally submit to the city on behalf of the Port District. Tonight, joining us is Netta Zaire, who is the Interim Community Development Director for the city, and Matt Ramey, who is principal with Ramey & Associates, who is the city's consultant working with the city and developing these updates. So with that, I'd like to turn to them. They are joining us remotely tonight, but of course we have many of our stakeholders here in the audience.
Good evening. Thank you so much, Brian. Netta Zier with the City of Ventura. As Brian mentioned, I'm the Interim Community Development Director. I'm joined today with Matt Ramey. We really thank you for having us here. We have a brief presentation just to give you some general context on what the general plan update is, what a general plan does for the city, and then specifically talk about the harbor area. There have been discussions in the community, but we also would like to hear from the Port Commission about your desires, ideas, thoughts for this area. This plan is a long-range planning tool, so we want to make sure that we're capturing kind of those big ideas and desires, so we incorporate it. With that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Matt, who will run us through a brief presentation.
Thank you, Netta. Thank you, Brian. So nice to be here with everyone this evening. Thank you very much for inviting us to join tonight. Again, I'm Matt Ramey with Ramey & Associates. We want to give you a brief presentation on where we are with the general plan process and then leave some time for questions and discussion. We go to the next slide, please. So the purpose of tonight is we want to give you an update. We will review the existing land use designations for the area and then discuss potential land use designation changes and other ideas that you may have. As you heard, we're sort of in the taking idea stage, and then you all will get something more formal and formal ideas that will then come back to us. And then we'll incorporate that into the general plan. So next slide, please. I want to start with something pretty basic, which is what is the purpose of a general plan, for those who don't know. And the general plan is a long-term policy document for the city, and it guides the city's actions for the next 25 to 30 years. It's updated about every 10 to 15 years. It's been just over 15 years now. The purpose of the general plan is to enhance and preserve community strengths and also to address issues or topics of concern. There are 9 required elements that you see here. One thing that's interesting about this project is that there are multiple parallel efforts going on at the same time. One of those efforts is an update to the LCP, which will be part of the general plan process. We're starting with the general plan land use and developing the land use vision, and then working with the Coastal Commission in order to work on the specific land use designations. So that will be part of the update process. There is also currently an active transportation plan that the city is developing. And we know that access to the area, to and through this area, is really important. And then there's also a climate adaptation and resilience plan that the city is working on, that we're working on as part of the city, that's also part of this effort. So there's lots of different components to this general plan, and then broader activities by the city. Next slide, please. Our process has been going on for a couple of years now, and we're still in the middle of it, but moving quickly. We started with our discovery phase of identifying issues and opportunities, and then we worked on a vision and guiding principles and core values and key strategies. That was adopted by the council about a year ago. We've been working on land use alternatives for about a year now, and we're moving our way through and getting closer to the end of that phase of work. We are then quickly moving into the policy development phase. We will then take all of those ideas, put them together into a draft plan. There'll be an environmental impact report. We'll work on the LCP, local coastal program, and then we'll go through the review and adoption phase of the project. During all of this is community engagement. And as was mentioned earlier, we have had dozens and dozens of meetings. Nick, who you heard from previously, is on our general plan advisory committee. So it's nice to hear his voice and hear him talking about some of his great ideas for landscape design. And so we are rapidly moving through this process. And now is actually a great time, as we're in the land use phase and thinking about policy, for you all to provide some more input into the process. Next slide, please. So I want to say that we have so far heard, we've met with the staff, and we've gotten community feedback on this area. And I just want to highlight some of what we've heard. This is just a fraction of what we've heard for this area. But essentially, the area is an underutilized asset for the community. We've sort of heard this time and again. Some people don't even know that it's there or that it's actually part of the city. And some people who do know it's there and just say this is such a, you know, a diamond in the rough. It's a gem that people don't know about and really could be capitalized on a lot more. While it is and could be more of an asset for the community, it also has to be balanced with all of the operations that are going on, including processing, public access, access to the Channel Islands. And so that has to happen sort of in balance with this public access for the Coastal Commission and public access to the water itself. There have been a lot of ideas that have come forward about improving access to the area, especially for bike access and transit access. There are ideas to revitalize the area for tourism and for local use. So sort of this balance of this question of who is this area for, and can it be a balance between neighbors, immediate neighbors, residents of the city of Ventura, but also this sort of broader regional resource. There are some ideas about exploring new development opportunities in key locations for retail, lodging, or mixed-use residential. There's a desire to increase the beauty and access to some of the natural open spaces. I mean, obviously, there's the beach that everybody knows about. The Santa Clara Estuary Park is something I think not as many people know about. I'm sure you all do. And access to the Channel Islands. There's also talk about expanding the Channel Islands Visitor Center. So again, these are just some of the ideas that we've heard throughout the process so far. We definitely want to hear more tonight and in the future. Next slide, please. One of the key aspects of a general plan is the intended future land use of every parcel in the city. And this term is called a land use designation. And the land use designation defines this future allowable use, the distribution of uses, and the intensity of parcel of land, intensity of building use on every single parcel. The general plan includes a land use diagram or a land use map showing the distribution of these uses, and it establishes standards for density. In residential, it's dwelling units per acre, and non-residential, it's typically floor area ratio. The land use map must align with and reflect content from all of the other elements of the plan. And in the city of Ventura, it also has to align with the LCP, the local coastal program, and get approval for part of the city by the California Coastal Commission, which definitely makes it a little bit trickier. Next slide, please. In order to reflect the fact that this area is unique and different, and that there is a coastal area that sort of has separate jurisdiction by the California Coastal Commission. We have created and sort of moved forward with four land use designations for this area. And these are actually a direct reflection of the zoning that is currently allowed in this area. Really, at this point, we have not proposed any changes to these land use designations, and we would certainly like to hear from you if there are any changes that you would like to see, and if so, what are they and where are they? So just running through them briefly, we have the harbor mixed use, which is residential in conjunction with visitor serving uses. See that here with number one on the map. The largest by far geographically is the harbor commercial, which is visitor serving retail, restaurants, recreation retail, commercial, as well as boating and commercial fishing facilities. You see that with number two on the map and sort of the pinky peach color. Parks and open space are in green here on the map, and that allows for a variety of active and passive parks and public open spaces. And then there's sort of the public general designation, which allows for a wide variety of public facilities. If you go to the next slide, please. We have, in the process, as I mentioned, we've been doing a lot of community engagement, and in our alternatives phase, we developed a land use alternative survey for where we ask questions about specific areas of the city. This area, we did not have proposed specific land use alternatives for. There were other cities, other portions of the city where we did ask specific questions about changes in land use, but not in this particular area. However, it was, this area was brought up as part of the survey, and we did ask a question sort of directly related to it in the survey. The question was essentially that Ventura is an attractive destination for visitors from the region, the state, and across the country, and that these tax revenues are used, which are generated, are used to actually help public services. And we asked whether the city should do any of the following to increase the number of visitors or the length of stay of visitors. And we had a series of potential policy directions that you see here with the text on the left. And the third the fourth from the bottom, right in the middle, is expand the number and diversity of activities in the harbor, including hotels, restaurants, and water-related activities. And we asked the people who took the survey whether they supported this, whether they didn't want it, or whether they weren't sure. What we can see here is that over 76% of the people who took this survey, and there were over 1,000 people who did, said that this would be a good idea of something to do in the city. So there was definitely support for this area and for really expanding the diversity and number of activities in this area. And in fact, more than almost any other question, it got really positive responses. Next slide. That's pretty much a brief overview of where we are. Again, we are moving to solidify the draft land use designations in the next few months. In parallel with that, we're going to be writing the policies, the preliminary policies for the general plan. Ultimately, we are trying to have a draft general plan out later this year and then move into the review and adoption phase of the process. So as I mentioned, now is really a good time for us to get input from you all on this area and on your ideas. And, you know, for right now, just to maybe get the conversation going, some of the questions that we were thinking of is, you know, what is your idea for the vision, the land use vision for the area? Looking at that land use map that I presented earlier, are there any land use designation changes that are needed? And then what other ideas or concepts should be included in the general plan, maybe beyond what the ideas that came up and the issues and that I presented earlier. Before I close, I just want to say that we have a very large website for the project, planventura.com. You can sign up for updates about the general plan. All of our meetings that we have had are up on that website, all of the documents that we have prepared. There's lots and lots of information to go through. If you have any specific questions, specific ideas, you can reach out to Netta or myself, and contact information is here. So I will close with that, and thank you all for the time this evening.
Well, Matt, thank you very much for the presentation. I think you, just like our last presentation on Parcel 5, I think you've got the juices going. We do have some public comments. So let's go to the public comments first. Matt Manzi. So Matt's online? Yep. Oh, Matt's here. I'm sorry. Welcome, Matt.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. Thanks for this discussion. I just wanted to really briefly just voice my support for a housing element in the LCP and ultimately in the harbor. If what I've been reading in the newspapers are correct, last year I read an article that Ventura was dead last in housing based on need. And so just seems to me like a no-brainer that we would have housing incorporated into the harbor area in some capacity. Especially if it's our goal to help the tenants be sustainable and be successful and have people down there eating and drinking and enjoying the area. It just seems like a win-win for everyone. So just wanted to briefly voice that I'm in favor of that. I'm a lifelong resident of Ventura. I love Ventura and I love housing. So just wanted to say that. I have a lot of friends that would love to live here, and just for various reasons, it's hard to find a place to live, whether that be for rent or for sale. I appreciate the discussion, and thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that input. We have also public comments from Nicholas Deitch. Deitch. That Nick.
Not again.
Not again. Yeah, and I hope I'm not overstepping. I am on the GPAC. I do not speak for the GPAC this evening. I'm a citizen of Ventura. I love the harbor. There's been a sort of, at times, I don't want to say adversarial, but challenging relationship between the coastal staff and the city staff and the harbor. I think that there's an opportunity here to, you know, come together to create a vision that everybody can buy into and happen. There's one of my favorite sayings is the elders, a society grows great when the elders plant trees and whose shade they know what they will never sit. And I think that's what we're doing. We're planting those trees. I agree with Matt Mancy that housing is a really important component. And traditionally the coastal zone has said, nah, not at the harbor. We finally, after, you know, 18 years, I think it took to get the housing built there. And it's actually quite wonderful. And I went through it again, just on the way here. It really is wonderful. It's a neighborhood with services. But one of the really cool things that's going on right now, and it's hard to imagine, but there's a mandate now that we include 15% affordable housing in these projects. And so I'm doing projects in downtown Ventura where market rate dwellings with a roof terrace that looks out at the coast, and 15% of the apartments in those projects will be for affordable, very low income residents. And what that means is that if I work at Trade Desk or Patagonia, I might have a glass of wine or a beer on the roof terrace with the person that served me lunch. I find that astounding. And I don't see why the harbor shouldn't embrace that idea. We have people who work here who are having a hard time affording to live in our community. We have an opportunity to do something really unique in that regard. So I just want to encourage you to open the doors to those possibilities. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Nick. Good thoughts. And we have Richard Beauchamp.
Well, it's actually Beauchamp.
Beauchamp? Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Let's see where to start. 50 years ago, we started developing our first marina here in Ventura, and since then we've developed both the Ventura West marinas, and still operate them. And we're in the process right now of trying to put a plan together to develop the first phase of the Ventura Marinas. And this opportunity is just kind of, it's not an opportunity yet, but we would like to have the opportunity to be able to add that residential component to the development, as well as the mixed use, because we think that the commercial component would be something that would add community. The public would become more interested in that particular area, because right now, I mean, we're boater centric, and that's who we deal with. But I think in the future, I mean, it's such a beautiful property, and I think that that development that has been that already is very, very successful, the Portside development, I think really tells you that the highest and best use for that property is really that kind of a use. And so we're really in favor of moving that direction with our parcel, if it works out. But we think that we add so much to the harbor by adding housing, as adding that that commercial space, which builds the public interest, developing a more of a promenade that kind of goes around the entire harbor. I just think it encapsulates the overall feel that we'd like to all see in the harbor. So as far as the partnerships that I represent, we're very much in favor of seeing a residential component added to where it can be used. So thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Do we have any other public comments online?
Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you. I will fill out the speaker card. Good evening. My name is Stephanie Caldwell. I am the president and CEO of the Ventura Chamber of Commerce. I also serve on the General Plan Advisory Committee. I'm going to wear a couple of hats. First of all, as a member of the GPAC, I'm excited to hear you talking about this tonight and putting some thought into it, because one of the things that we have been really working hard to push out to the community is getting that feedback and that input, because this isn't the plan for the city council or for the 20 of us that sit on the GPAC. This is for our community. So thank you for taking the time to really give that some thought. Secondly, in my role as the CEO of the chamber, of course, economic development is always at the top of my mind. And I think that the work that you all have done here to elevate the harbor and the business and the economic development that's happening. We just heard about the incredible, you know, educational opportunities to retail, to, you know, all of those wonderful things and everything in between. I think to be able to expand that is really what we should be striving for. And the previous speakers talked a little bit about potentially the mixed use designation. Again, I echo the thoughts of the fact that we are in a significant housing crisis. We have a shortage of available housing, and you know, the tie-in for economic development is heads in beds equal feet on the street. And what a better way than to have more housing here at the harbor that would create that built-in audience for the restaurants and retail and shops and whatnot here at the harbor. I will say, you know, we have been so impressed with the work that Portside did. We have a number of members that have begun their businesses in the live workspaces there, everything from wellness to architects, to a boutique, and many, many others. And so just the vibrancy and the diversity of those businesses that hopefully will continue to grow and may outgrow their space at Portside and grow into other areas. So just want to thank you for that. And then in my final hat that I'm wearing as a resident of Ventura, I am a frequent visitor to the harbor. And I just, again, can't thank you enough for the dedication and the commitment that you have made to continually improve the harbor and the money that you have put aside to reinvest. It is paying off. And I think just even looking at that original slide that Matt Ramey shared, showing kind of the community's view of the harbor 3 years ago when we started the general plan process to where it is now, I think it's a much better place. And I'm excited to see the continued improvements. So thank you.
Stephanie, thanks for the multiple perspectives. And Brian tells me that you've been very busy with the GPAC. So thanks for making time to come here tonight and share your thoughts with us. Much appreciated. We've got two more public comments. David?
Good evening. I'm David Boatner with Ventura Yacht Club. Instead of broad brushing, I'm going to get pretty narrow technical. I'd like to speak about the LCP. We're currently in the process of permitting a dock replacement at Ventura Yacht Club. We're running up against some difference or divergence of opinion with the Coastal Commission with regards to small boat usage and access to the harbor. And they are working with a model that says a bigger boat is more expensive than a smaller boat. And I'm here to tell you that times have changed. That when boats were made of wood or they were made of fiberglass, that was a pretty good metric. It worked really well. But now it's not. I have a 45-foot J35. I mean, a 45-year-old J35 that I race. Fiberglass. It's worth about $45,000. I raced against a 30-foot boat made of carbon fiber that cost $450,000. So size in and of itself is not a good indicator of what's expensive and affordable or not expensive. A motorboat, by its nature, costs more than a sailboat. So I would like to get away from a failed process that is being pushed forward by the Coastal Commission. I see that Channel Islands Harbor moved slightly and got some relief with the matrix of boats that they're requiring. The cheapest boat, most inexpensive boat, is one you put on a trailer. There's no doubt about it. We have a 10 to 14% vacancy rate in our 30-foot slips at Ventura Yacht Club over the last several years. We have nobody on the waiting list for a 36-foot. This is indicative that the present system does not encourage low-cost boating. And I think one of the things we should do is look at the programs that don't work and don't do that. Do something else. You know, if it doesn't work, don't do it again. So I would like to see an acknowledgement that boats have changed. The Department of Boating and Waterways standards have gotten wider slips. Ventura Yacht Club fits in a square just like everybody else. If the slip has to be wider, there's going to be fewer slips. And the Coastal Commission, to this point, hasn't really recognized that. They did tell us that LCP would be a good place to address this. And so I'm bringing this up now because moving forward, this isn't going to get better. This is only going to get worse. And every person or every entity who has to replace a slip in the harbor will be coming up against this issue. Also, we're a nonprofit. All of our money goes to making docks and teaching kids how to sail. And so we host the Power Squadron for education. Our situation is different than a for-profit marina. And yes, we need for-profit marinas. They're great. But we're different. And I think that not for-profit entities like the Women's Sailing Center in Channel Islands, Leo Robbins Center as part of the government, should be held to a slightly more flexible standard because there is no profit. It's all being put back into the community every last dime. So I hope that you'll look at this idea and not continue down the path of a bigger boat is more expensive than a smaller boat. Thank you.
David, thank you for that input. And we have one last comment from Garrett. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Garrett McKinney. I'm the general manager at Safe Harbor Ventura Isle. That's at 1363 Spinnaker Drive. And as you had mentioned, I just actually went through that same process. So I feel your pain there. We ended up cutting a small slip at 36 feet. So I wholeheartedly agree with it. It doesn't make sense anymore to grade the quality of vessel by the size versus the price tag. But that being said, I am a for-profit company and I am all for the economic vitality for the harbor as a whole. It supports my interests and I really appreciate the ideas that you brought in front of us today. I thought one of the most important takeaways from one of your slides was the required elements. And number six is safety. And one of those safety concerns for me is the homeless population currently living in the River Haven and the effects it's had on my business and the harbor as a whole. So I would hope that we can address that in the general plan and, the road conditions on Spinnaker specifically. If you haven't taken a drive down Spinnaker recently after these storms, I urge you to do so. It is a safety concern for me and my membership. Thank you.
Thank you.
We also received a written public comment from Eric Leslie, Director of Marina Operations for Ventura West and Oceans West Marina. This was distributed to the commissioners and posted on the website.
All right. Any other input from staff before we turn it over to commissioners? Commissioners, thoughts?
Yeah, I'll jump in here. First off, I thank you everyone for coming here and commenting tonight, and I couldn't agree more with all the comments, but in particular, I think those related to housing. I think back at the city of Ventura, and Nick knows this, for the last 25 years, we've been talking about more housing downtown, because that housing will create a more vibrant community and will make our commercial enterprises downtown that much more successful. I think the same thought process needs to be used with respect to the harbor. And I think the portside development is a perfect example of that. And I think it's something that we should pursue. And I think to help Nettie and give them some guidance to be more specific, I think that mixed use category of land use is appropriate for the piece of property that was spoken about for the West Marina, which is right adjacent to Portside. If you look on the map, I think that at a minimum is something that I'd like to see occur, to give us some flexibility, as you said, to give us the opportunity, right? It's not anything automatic when you change the land use designation by any stretch, but I certainly, and the kind of opportunity I think would be good for the harbor. And the other thing I noticed on the land use map is our large parking area there along harbor, adjacent to the mobile home park, is actually, I believe, in a residential category. Is that right? If we go back to the map, and I don't know whether that was intentional. Typically, the residential land use designation does not allow a parking only parking lot. So I don't know whether that's, you got to go up high. It's right at the corner of across from the, yeah, there it is right there. Yeah. And I don't know whether that's,
I don't know if Netta can or Matt can tell us what, there's not a numeric number there. I can tell you that the lot is been improved by the Port District for boat parking, mm-hmm. And is striped as such. Certainly, we all see it every day and drive by it, and currently doesn't get a lot of usage, but that is an intended use for the property. I'm not sure what the general plan shows for it.
I believe the zoning, and that's the mobile home park, and it's specifically zoned for that use. Looks like that parking lot area has the same designation that the rest of the mobile home park does.
And I guess what I'm saying is I'm not sure that should be the case, and that's something to be considered, and maybe that's maybe that's something to be looked at. If it's made residential, then we need to think about it a little differently than we ever have, because certainly since I've lived in this town, it's always been a commercial parking lot, frankly. Just something to think about, and interested to hear what some of the commissioners think about that property. Anyway, those are my comments for now.
I'm wondering first, I don't think this is the same PowerPoint presentation we got in our packet. So are we going to get a copy of this one?
Yeah, I think you have it, right? Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be posted to the website.
Great. Just because I specifically wanted the question, that was part of it. One of the things if you could help me understand, as we talk about things that we'd like to see happen for the harbor, how does this relate to the climate action plan with community resilience to anticipated impacts of climate change?
Do you want to chime in, Matt, or would you like me to? So we are also doing a climate action and resilience plan. That plan is a little bit ahead of the general plan update itself and should be going to council in the coming months for their adoption. And that will have a number of action items related to that. As part of the LCP that's being done, as well as the general plan safety element, there is going to be a lot of discussion and focus around sea level rise and safety and climate change as it relates to that. And that analysis and information is going to come in the later phases after we pass the land use alternatives phase.
So there'll be an opportunity to bring the climate action plan here as well, so we can incorporate harbor needs into that?
Yes, the climate action and resilience plan is citywide.
Okay, great. Because it seems like anything we're talking about has to be a complement with building for resiliency.
Agreed.
Yeah, so really heartened with the idea about housing. I think, again, thinking about it through the lens of the climate action plan, transit, that idea of bike access to the harbor being much more easier and safer would be a high priority. I have to agree that I'd like this accelerated, but you could lose an entire family in some of the potholes on Spinnaker. So if we could get that accelerated, that would be great. But I like the direction it's going. I'm really heartened to hear the idea about more housing down here. It's not something I'd actually considered as part of our future development. And love that that is something that we might be thinking how to implement more of here, along with the mixed use. So very excited to talk more about that. I think that's it for now.
Good comments. Thank you. Can we go back to the survey results from the city? I think there was the graph where they showed the percentages of responses. And Matt, you highlighted this one where 76% of the community respondents said they want to expand use of diversity at the harbor. You know, 3.5 years ago, I volunteered to sit on this board, and one of the questions was why? And my answer was, because this is a diamond in the rough. And when I talk to all my neighbors and all my teammates and all my employees, I say, well, when's the last time you went down to the harbor? And they say, yeah, probably been about 5 years. And it's like, we've got to crack that code, and we got to get people to come down here. And one of the challenges that we talk about is you got to get in your car to drive. Todd continues to press Congressman Carbajal's office to have his home office here. And his response is, yeah, but you got to drive. So we've got to come through that. The transportation idea is great. Clearly, the public recognizes this opportunity. And so that's what we're trying to do. And I appreciate the city coming and talking to us. There was talk about, and I think, Nick, you pointed out that in the past, maybe it hasn't been a collaborative environment. But I think the board's opinion now is clearly we want to collaborate and work with the city. Netta, we appreciate you making the time to come talk to us tonight. Share where you're at. I think, Jackie, your comments were right on, right? We're paying attention to their plans. We want to participate in their plans. And look to Brian to continue this kind of dialogue with the city. I'll just say on the housing front, everybody seemed to comment on it. It's a consistent theme. As an employer who tries to attract people to come work for me or work for my company here in Ventura County, it's a tough sell. The first thing they always say is, I can't afford to live there. So we've got to solve that. We've got to give them the opportunities to come here and live there. And then finally, Chris, I'll say that parking lot. Yeah, the highest and best use of the parking lot has been the fire department training and the police department motorcyclists. You know, it's fun to watch them navigate those cones, but yeah, we can do more. So, Brian, great session. What do you want to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, I mean, this really is the opportunity. There have been off and on discussions over the years I've been here about, but we need more master planning and we need to kind of think more holistically. And so when this started to happen in terms of the city beginning to move forward on the updating of the general plan and including the LCP in that process, it really gave us an opportunity to begin to participate at the staff level, and now invite the city to join us tonight and get really engage our stakeholders on the discussion. So I think now is that time to have the ability to influence the LCP moving forward and begin to integrate again, as I said earlier, with the parcel 5. It could be that that's part of the information we give back to the city now, because these things start to come together. So great comments on housing. The city did pass, I think it was just in the last week or so, passed an inclusionary housing ordinance requirement. So I think that was to Nick's point that housing developments moving forward, I think, have some obligations for about 15% affordability baked into their project, or money's going to affordable housing. That's a policy directive from the city council. I think that's the right move in the right direction there. And certainly more rooftops planned well, designed well, and implemented well can certainly create a bigger harbor community. So I think it's well taken feedback, and certainly continue the dialogue moving forward.
Brian, if I may, if it is okay, can I ask an additional maybe probing question? If we go back to the land use maps, I've heard general comments about adding more mixed use and housing incorporated, specifically about the parcel next to Portside, but are there any other areas in Area 2, which is now just commercial, that there is interest from the commission of adding a harbor mixed use designation? And we can craft around some policies that would restrict the mixed use to be ground floor commercial and residential uses, either on the upper floors or not along the promenade, to make sure we are still activating the harbor and the promenade area. If that was the case, and we kind of crafted language around that, is there interest in that area too? And if so, where?
Parcel 17.
Brian. Well, one comment, and Safe Harbors is here so they can speak for themselves. They just went through a major master planning effort on the water side. I know they have looked at some other commercial opportunities. I don't think they've drilled down to anything specific, but I think they have sort of looked at the land side of their property, and are there other opportunities to maybe bring that up to a higher level of use as well, highest and best use. So I don't know if that's residential in nature or other commercial activities that could be on site. So again, don't want to put Safe Harbors on the spot, but I think that's the parcel that Neto's referring to. I heard another member of the audience, it might have been Chuck, say another parcel. Maybe he wants to comment on that publicly.
Talk, Chuck.
Chuck, that was your cue. That was my softball for you, Chuck.
Actually, am I on? Okay. Actually, I didn't have any comments except to respond to her question about were there any known properties that might benefit from this mixed-use harbor mixed-use category. Obviously, Portside, which is a mixed-use plot, sits right adjacent to Ventura West Marina. And she's circling up there. And we are, in fact, engaging in, another lease and a complete rebuild. And we're looking at some pretty exciting things for landside. And that mixed use category would give us an opportunity to look at some things we can't right now. So the plug here is for mixed use, at least for parcel 17.
So parcel 17 is Ventura West 1.
Mm-hmm. Ventura West 1, behind the hotels, adjacent to Portside. And the road meets that rocky road spinnaker out there.
Safe Harbors is parcel 2 and 3 on the district's parcel map. And Netta may have also been referring to the.
And if there are any other parts of the harbor area, I know that there is a lot of surface parking lot that serves the harbor, which is very needed, and commercial uses. But is the desire or evolution over time to see other things incorporated in or designed differently to supplement, complement, or enhance those areas? We can craft the land use designation around that to make sure we're addressing the harbor's vision over the next, 20 or 30 years, especially since we are going to undertake updating the LCP, which is a huge lift. This would be the opportunity to incorporate it into that. So the last time the LCP was updated was in 1989. So it is very long overdue. And we want to make sure that when we do it this time, we do it right.
Mr. Chair, I did have a question. Ned, I don't know if you and Matt heard the discussion prior to this item regarding the grass lawn area and the direction to move into an active gathering space, park-like element. Do you see any need to modify the LCP for this type of activity, or the fact that it's ancillary to a commercial use, which is the shopping center, speaks for itself, and open spaces within a shopping center are considered commercial as well. So any feedback or thought on that? Because I think clearly the direction we got tonight was to move in that direction.
Yeah, as you see from the number two harbor, commercial recreation is a part of it too. And we can make sure we put kind of open space in there too, to make sure we're not creating any conflict and making sure that's easy for you in the future. But we leave you this information, and we can even send on more supplemental information if you all desire to digest it some more and get back to us if there are any other kind of changes or shifts to these designation. The harbor mixed use and harbor commercial are specific to the harbor, so we can craft them to make sure we're meeting your needs.
So we're seeing the designations of 1, 2, 3, and 4, but what I think you're telling the board is that the verbiage and the definitions of each can also be modified at this time.
Yes, this is draft language and a draft designation. So this is the perfect opportunity to take a look at that and look at this map here of where those are overlaid to make sure that as this evolves, that language in the designation and the desires for the harbor area match up, so that as we amend the LCP, we've captured all of that for you.
So harbor mixed use could also mean a mix of commercial uses.
Yes, and it does.
And if I could jump in quickly, I've been a little quiet here since the presentation. I think this is really a great opportunity to do some visioning for this area. And just because there are these four designations here, these are draft designations, as Ned has said, they can be modified, but modifying can actually also mean adding a new one or creating hybrids of these. So you don't actually just have to stick with these four and tweak the language. If there's something that you think should be completely different, this is the time to actually create that new designation and modify it so that it meets the vision of what you want to see.
Yeah, I guess what I was right, I don't want to get into any wordsmithing right now. That never works out. what I would ask is staff to, through our strategic plan and our public workshop that we've held, as well as other, I think, directions provided by the board, if you could go through these and use that information to suggest any changes. If anything of significance comes up that you want to, please bring it back to us as the board. But I certainly have confidence in the staff to be able to articulate our goals and objectives through that language.
I think I would extend that. We talked about parcel 5 tonight, and when we did our objectives, we kind of prioritized parcel 5 as the next opportunity. Down the road, we've talked about parcel 8, and we've just said we're not quite ready, and the National Park Service is not quite ready, but let's use this opportunity to make sure we set the groundwork for what we envision or what could be envisioned for parcel 8, too. Jackie?
You know, just I really appreciated people coming tonight and offering public comment. I have to say I've missed it. So thank you for coming and thank you for providing your input. And I'm excited by really glad that the city came and presented this. I'm looking forward to incorporating our ideas directly into it. So thank you.
Well said. It's been nice to see the participation. This is probably the fun part of sitting on this board is getting that future vision and helping Brian shape.
At least that, when you're all nice.
Just be careful as you drive out of the harbor this evening. This is a public service announcement.
Oh, well, thank you, everyone. Yeah, so it looks like we're going to wrap up this comment. This was receive only. Matt, Netta, I appreciate your information and participation tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. We look forward to further conversations.
Thank you. And I'll echo Chris's tasking for the staff to look at this. So, all right, we are going to move on to our last item on the general agenda, standard agenda. And it is item 4, an update on the state of emergency due to the atmospheric river rain events, which describes yesterday and today
and next week and so on and so forth. I think legal counsel, Andy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Might you brief the board on the emergency resolution requirements?
Yeah. The code requires a 4/5 vote. And I looked at after Brian and I had talked briefly this afternoon, I looked at the code specifically again to see if 4/5 meant 80% or 4/5 meant 4 affirmative votes. And the code section says by a 4/5 vote of all of its members. So that tells me we need 4 votes to approve this resolution. That being said, what I'd like to do is go ahead and do a roll call vote and get a three, unanimous vote of the members present, which I think staff ought to be directed not to to do its best to take a break for the next 3 weeks until the next meeting when we have at least 4 board members present. But I'd like to get a 3-0 vote tonight to at least create a defensible argument with respect to those projects already in motion and other issues that may arise.
Councilor, I can give a quick update.
Yeah, why don't you give a quick update? Because especially one of the key aspects of the emergency declaration is it gives you a little bit more latitude on the expenditure of district funds. Is there anything that you think that you need to do in the next week that would fall into that time period?
I think based on what we know right now, we are good both with our current procurement requirements and the contracts that have been let. I certainly am not good at predicting weather and any other future events that might come our way in the next week or two. But we are active in sand relocation. There's been a significant amount of debris removal, but I think that has generally wound down, although every time we get a new storm, and obviously with the significance of the storm that just came through, I'm sure there is quite a bit more there as well. So Sergio and Wayne, are you working with the individual staff on some of the debris removal at this point? I know we had wrapped up a contract.
Currently, we do have staff doing debris removal, but the problem we have is that river has widened twice as much, and every time we have a storm, we have more debris coming on. So needless to say, I think sooner or later, we're probably going to have to do another run with a contractor to get the bigger items out of the beach. So, yeah. Okay. But we're currently trying to get what we can in-house. So, yeah.
Okay. I don't know that we would be up against a hard number yet in terms of procurement. The other alternative would be requesting a special meeting if we need something between now and April 5th.
April 5th.
So we have that. We have, as I mentioned, the sand relocation. Of course, the dredging is now underway. And the rain has not stopped that, which is great. I think they started on Saturday. They've been rebuilding beaches, which is great to see that effort underway. Hopefully, I think with this storm, I know it started to get a bit windy, but there was not, I don't believe there was high surf. There was obviously a lot of rain coming down, but they were able to keep going during that time. We've had several meetings. I know we reported on that previously, but there have been more meetings, including one today with the FEMA representatives regarding our application for disaster services. I have not had a chance to check the county map, but I know the governor just declared another state of emergency with respect to the continuing storm events. Most of the counties, I think, in the state were named in that. I don't know if anyone knows if Ventura was named, but I think that just happened in the last 24, 48 hours, potentially. And we've been doing a lot of sand removal ourselves, both within the village and in areas where there's been sand accumulation. We've been working closely with the city as it relates to sand on Spinnaker Drive, as that sand has been blown over from the beach areas onto the streets themselves. They've been active in moving sand out of the lanes and then working with our staff to relocate that back to the beach area. So this is not sand that's being lost, but it's being put back where it should be at this point. So I think those are kind of the key updates. I think the challenge has obviously been, it's just been one atmospheric river event after the next. You know, maybe there's a 4, 5, 7 day break and then the next one comes. And as Sergio points out, obviously that's continued to bring more debris flow into the area. I think the other areas that we're in communication with FEMA on are with respect to Inner Harbor areas near the Arendelle Barranca and the an area close to the Safe Harbor marinas where there's an outflow from Ag off of Olivas Drive. So looking at those, having some preliminary conversations with FEMA about those areas and whether they could be qualified for potential dredging. I doubt any of that could get done while Manson's here. They couldn't even get to the area next to Safe Harbor. It's too shallow. But those are areas we're going to continue to watch in terms of continued accumulation. Some of those areas, and specifically the area related to Arendelle Barranca, a portion of that falls within city jurisdiction, most of it in our jurisdiction, but that's an area for us to continue to dialogue with as well. It is not easy to mobilize a dredge or a clamshell or anything of that nature to get into those areas and do that. So it may be something we're going to have to continue to watch for making sure we have safe navigation and determine if there's a need to do anything sooner than the next year. So those are, I think, kind of the updates. Todd, anything you want to add to that? No. Okay.
Do we have any public comments on this item? Commissioners, questions?
The primary benefit of the resolution is that it authorizes you to take some actions outside of our normal procedures, right?
Correct. Procurement in particular.
Response right. to the emergency. We don't have enough votes here to continue the resolution. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. That is the direction you've got from, or the advice you have from council.
So the recommended action, as it's worded, is not really in play at this point, as I would understand it. So I guess my thinking is that I would recommend that we take an action to determine that the emergency still exists and that staff be directed to continue to take all steps necessary to respond. And that if something comes up prior to our next meeting that requires action, that you work with the chair to schedule an emergency meeting for us to act appropriately.
I think that's perfect.
Is that a motion?
That sounded like
yes.
Second.
So we can do a voice vote or just a.
It's not a resolution anymore.
It's not a resolution.
Yeah, you can do a voice vote.
All right. So there is a motion.
And a second.
Motion and a second to give that guidance to staff. work on the notes there. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, motion is approved. All right. And we lost the crowd, but before we adjourn the night, especially on behalf of our Harbor Patrol, we did want to recognize Deputy Paul Korber, who 25 years ago today lost his life in the line of duty in a rescue. I think we all admire our Harbor Patrol, the work they do, the sacrifices they make, the risks they take. And so it's in his honor that we will adjourn tonight's meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Night, everyone.